Thank you for downloading the Dunkcast, featuring some of the best bits from City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks.
Ah, there you are. Thank you for downloading this. It's the Dunkcast, or the Dunkcast, featuring some of the stuff we've been up to on the City Talk 105.9 Breakfast Show. Always good to find out who you are listening to this and what you might be doing whilst listening to the podcast. You can always email me, duncan@citytalk.fm, particularly if you listen to this doing an activity that's a little bit different. Maybe walking the dog, in the bath, though that could be dangerous, doing the ironing, whatever. Drop me an email, duncan@citytalk.fm. Some great stuff coming up and some of the things we've been up to. I have a regular contributor to City Talk Breakfast. His name is Frank McKenna from downtown Liverpool in Business. And he and I were talking a few days ago about an elected mayor for Liverpool. He was making the point that Liverpool City Council maybe didn't really do the best possible consultation they could have done in consulting with the people of the city regarding whether or not they want an elected mayor for Liverpool. Frank was making his points, and on the switchboard, a call came in from Warren Bradley, who is the leader of Liverpool City Council. He wasn't happy with some of the comments Frank was making, and he took Frank to task. Hear the conversation on this podcast, and it's safe to say we ended up wiping the blood off the studio walls. Someone else I spoke to during the week is someone who I like. He's the MP for Birkenhead, Frank Field. He's a politician that has a lot of respect both in and outside of politics. He's been asked to pay back £7,000 in expenses. He says he shouldn't have to do it. He and I had a conversation about this. Hear his thoughts on this a little bit later on in this podcast as we talk to the MP for Birkenhead, Frank Field. There was also a story during the week about CBeebies, the BBC's children's channel, changing the end to the nursery rhyme Humpty Dumpty. As you can imagine, I was less than impressed about this, and I was asking you, in the current climate in 2009, where we find it necessary to change the ends of nursery rhymes, to come up with some alternative suggestions for the endings of nursery rhymes in the 21st century. And as ever, you did not let me down. Here's some of those a little bit later on. And it wouldn't be the Dunkcast or the Dunkcast without a Dunkin's Donut. And the story that's been doing the rounds over the last 7 days are the parents of a young boy who apparently disappeared off in a helium balloon in Colorado. You would have seen the footage on your TV news programs. It turned out to be a hoax. They wanted a little bit of publicity because they wanted to be on a reality TV show. The lad in question wasn't on this helium balloon. He was hiding in his attic. Find out what I had to say about that when you hear the Dunkin's Donut. Enjoy the Dunkcast and the Dunkcast. And of course, send me your emails. Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N, duncan@citytalk.fm.
City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks. City Talk 105.9.
And now, the Expert Factor.
Our Friday morning expert on City Talk Breakfast is Frank McKenna from downtown Liverpool and Business. Morning, Frank.
Good morning, Duncan.
Keeping well?
Yeah, great, thank you.
Lovely. Let's go cracking this morning. Number of things I want your thoughts about. Something that I think has gone under the radar a little bit this week, and we're talking about it on our headlines this morning here at City Talk 105.9, is yesterday was the final day for people to have their say about whether or not Liverpool should have an elected mayor. What's your take on this?
Well, I'm not surprised that it's gone under the radar, because Liverpool City Council's promotion, if that's the right phrase, of this consultation process has been poor, to say the least. I mean, I've seen a couple of mentions in the Liverpool Daily Post. I don't think I've seen anything in the Echo, and it's been mentioned a couple of times on City Talk. But other than that, the council certainly haven't gone out of the way to enable people to have a real debate and discussion about an issue that, you know, is a serious one. The way in which the city is governed at the moment, I think, is unsatisfactory. We've got too many layers of government in Liverpool. And, you know, the downtown Liverpool and business members consistently, when polled, have said that they think it will be a positive move for the city to have an elected mayor. And I think this consultation has been a bit of a sham. What I would say, Duncan, is if we get a change of government next year, as most people are anticipating, the Conservative Party have actually said they'll have a referendum on the issue of elected mayors in all major cities, including Liverpool, and only then will the people of Liverpool actually get the opportunity of debating, discussing the issues properly and having a real say. So I'm not holding my breath. I think the consultation will have had minimal input from the citizens of Liverpool, And I think that suits the City Council. I'm being quite cynical about it, but as I say, the marketing and the advertising for this particular consultation has been terribly poor.
How would it work, Frank? For people listening this morning who might not be totally clued up and a little bit confused, if we had an elected mayor like they have in London with Boris Johnson, we wouldn't have a Lord Mayor, is that correct?
No, the Lord Mayor position stays.
Right.
You continue, which is a civic role that people undertake.
But isn't that quite confusing?
Not really, because an elected... I mean, what you're talking about here is an executive mayor that has real powers.
Yeah.
And with those powers, real responsibility. So, for example, over the past few years, issues that we could talk about, the tram going belly up, the fourth grace on the waterfront not happening, some of the squabbles that you've seen at Liverpool City Council, who's to blame? Well, no one knows, because the structure of local government at the moment is so confusing that it's easy for people to start pointing the finger elsewhere. With an elected mayor, you have a person who has to take responsibility in decision-making, and every 4 years, people have a say as to whether that person should be re-elected or, as in Ken Livingstone's case, the time's passed, they move on, and you bring someone new in. And I personally think it would be a major boost to the local political system in Liverpool, just in terms of people's interest. I mean, if you look at turnout at local elections these days in the city, again, woefully poor. And for me, it would be a reinvigoration of local politics and local government, and it would be a positive thing. But more importantly, I think, let's have the debate and let people have a real say.
Yeah.
You know, Liverpool City Council had it within their powers last year, during the local election period, to actually have a referendum of its own. Now, if they were that confident that people in Liverpool aren't interested in this this progressive measure, why did they not undertake that referendum? Why did they go through this sham of a consultation process that few of us knew about?
I think an elected mayor is the way forward. I mean, there's total accountability as well. Let's just going to pause for a second. I've got a call coming in. I believe it's Warren Bradley who is on the line. Morning, Warren.
Morning. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. You called up the show. I don't know what about, so why have you called up?
I've just been listening to Frank, and quite frankly, you know, some of the things that Frank said are pretty wide of the mark. I mean, the amount of work that we've done with the local press to actually make sure people are aware that this is going on is, you know, beyond what other local authorities have done. And I think what Frank's failing to tell people is that even in Manchester, the place that he always uses is the Ivory Tower, as the place that always does particularly well. Frank knows the results of the referendum, or the request for a referendum around elected mayor. There was very few people interested in that. And of the ones that were interested, they said no to an elected mayor for Manchester. So it's quite ironic. And, you know, Frank identifies and points a finger at the tram. Well, we all know why Mersey Tram and six other tram schemes in the country were pulled. Mm. It's because the Department for Transport actually pulled them.
OK, a lot of points there. You're the leader of Liverpool City Council. You called up. You heard Frank McKenna from Downtown Liverpool and Business on the show this morning. Frank's still on the line. I mean, you two might as well have a conversation. Frank, I mean, some harsh criticisms of you there.
Well, they're not harsh criticisms of me. I'm expressing the views that most people in Liverpool would express. And if you do a straw poll of your listeners this morning and ask them whether they've heard of the consultation on the elected mayor, my guess is that they'd share my views rather than Warren's. I also have to say, if I was sat in Manchester, I wouldn't want an elected mayor. The leadership in Manchester has been consistently good for over 15 years now. They've got a full-time political leadership there that's delivered tremendous success over a long period of time. Now, Warren knows
Liverpool hasn't changed over the last 10 years with the political leadership it's had. You can't tell me that the investment has come to Liverpool over the last 10 years because there hasn't been real stable politicians running the city. We have seen far more investment in Liverpool over the last 10 years than Manchester has seen. And that is actual fact. There is no doubt about it. We now, our children are performing in this city far better than the children of Manchester. We've got lots and lots of things that are happening in this city that we've done in the last 10 years that proves that Liverpool is pushing ahead of Manchester. What you've got to remember is the base that we came from. We were left because of extremist politicians with an absolute dog's dinner in this city, and we have slowly but surely improved it. And there can be absolutely no doubt about that. So I really do think, Frank, you know, when you compare us with Manchester, you look at the amount of government money that has gone into Manchester.
Far more than the government jobs that have gone into Manchester.
And if we play them on a level playing field, as far as I'm concerned, we are absolutely committed with a real vision.
All right, listen. This is all about having a conversation, Warren. You may well be the leader of Liverpool City Council, but let's...
speech, Warren, but can I just say that nobody promotes Liverpool's success more than I. Nobody acknowledges Liverpool's improvement over the last 10 years more than downtown Liverpool. Nonetheless, we cannot complain about lack of investment when we've had 14 years of Objective One funding. We've had massive amounts of help and support from the government over the past decade, and hopefully that support will continue. In terms of local government structures, as a city region, you know and I know that Liverpool does not work as effectively as Greater Manchester. My belief is that an elected mayor in Liverpool would offer the direction, the vision and the leadership to provide that sort of cohesion and coordination that they enjoy down the road in the M62. But ultimately, as I say, it shouldn't be you and I having this discussion this morning. This should have been a discussion and debate taking place right across the communities of Liverpool, culminating in a proper referendum, a vote, so that we know exactly whether people support this move or not.
OK, listen, Warren, what I'm going to do is I give you literally 30 seconds to reply to that, then I'm going to invite you into my studio at a later date, because I think there's a fascinating conversation going on here. I think you and Frank need to be in the studio where we've got the luxury of time to thrash this out. Just respond to what Frank was saying, and then we'll get back on track.
Well, Frank hasn't taken any notice of the work that we've done across the city region. Over the last 3 years, we've worked continually in a collaborative way to make sure that we are pushing at the margins now. Let's not forget, the biggest thing that AGMA had to deliver for Manchester was the congestion charge, and they never managed to do that. And in Liverpool, we've conveniently forgot that that failed, the amount of public money that was piled into it, and it failed. So let's not forget that. AGMA aren't all the picture they're painted by certain people. I'd love to have a debate with Frank around this. Let's not forget the mayor for Liverpool also has been trying to get the signatures to call for a referendum. Year on year on year, we're told that they're going to get the signatures, yet they failed. Even when the government lowered the target for signatures, they still failed. Even when the government offered online opportunity, they still failed. And what I'd finish on is, have a read of the Municipal Journal this week. See what they've done in Stoke City Council and what they're doing in Stoke-on-Trent because of the elected mayor and because there isn't clear, transparent government with an elected mayor. I'm the leader of the city. I could well, if there's a referendum and people agree to an elected mayor, put myself forward for the elected mayor. But at the end of the day, I believe in open, transparent governance. I'm the strong leader, and cabinet model gives that open, transparent governance to the people of this city.
The best of Barks. City Talk 105.9.
The BBC was yesterday accused of outrageous political correctness after changing the words to a nursery rhyme on a children's show. Now, I like CBeebies. CBeebies is often a fixture in our place because I have a 5-year-old little girl. She's called Lily. CBeebies is not always on. Sometimes it's used as a carrot. Sometimes it's used as a stick. Not in a horrible way, but if she doesn't do as she's told, she doesn't get to watch CBeebies. They've got a program called Something Special, and they've altered the words to Humpty Dumpty and gave it a more cheerful ending. Instead of being able to put Humpty together again, the new version claimed all the king's horses and all the king's men made Humpty happy again. Well, the mind boggles. The amended version of Humpty Dumpty was broadcast on Friday, the Something Special show presented by Justin Fletcher. You and I will know him as Mr. Tumble. It is aimed at children with learning difficulties. but is popular with all children under the age of five. Now, the BBC have insisted the nursery rhyme was not modified due to its target audience. God, that's patronising. And said it had only been changed for creative purposes. Well, what creative purposes? What are these creative purposes that exist? You know, you can't put Humpty together again. Face facts, that's life. An egg falls down, it cracks, that's it. Because there are plenty of nursery rhymes out there, of which the endings are less than savoury. What are we going to do about London Bridge? London Bridge is falling down. We can't have it falling down. My God, there could be an accident. If London Bridge is falling down, what are they going to change that to? London Bridge is falling down. Oh, no, it's not falling down. No, it's closed for structural repairs until further notice. Listen out for further announcements. My God, where are you going to draw the line with this? Eh? Now, you see, I quite like the BBC. One day, when they sack me from here, I might end up working one of their radio stations doing the gardening phone-in. I can't spend all of my energy and all of my time slagging off the BBC. I think it does certain things incredibly well, but CBeebies, which I love, which I cherish, particularly Sarah Jane. My God, she can bend her body. Right, I love CBeebies, but don't change the ends of nursery rhymes. So it got me thinking this morning. Nursery rhymes, alternative endings in today's climate. Some great suggestions coming in. Ben from Oral says, Jack and Jill went up the hill, but first had to carry out a risk assessment. Surprise, there isn't a handrail on the edge of the hill. I want to hear from Adam in Rock Ferry. Morning, Adam. Ring a ring of roses, a pocket full of posies, a tissue. We all sit down carefully to avoid injury. And one here, I don't know who it's from, but thank you. Jack and Jill went up the hill to fetch a pail of water, but when they got there, the well was dry due to global warming. Linda on the email says, Duncan, here's one for you. Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet, eating her curds and whey. There came a big spider that sat down beside her. She said, you don't scare me, mate. I'm a feminist. Thank you. More coming in here. This one's from Liam. A little Bo Peep has lost his sheep and can't tell where to find them. Leave them alone and they'll come home. And if they don't, then you can still claim a major subsidy for the EU's common agricultural policy. That's Liam in North Wales. Cheers, Liam. Jed on the email, Duncan at citytalk.fm. Simple Simon met a pieman going to the fair. Said Simple Simon to the pieman, let me taste your ware. And quite rightly, the pieman was arrested. And a final one here. Composure, please. Hey, diddle, diddle, the cat and the fiddle, the cow jumped over the moon. The little dog laughed to see such fun, and the dish had a civil partnership with the spoon.
The best of Barks. City Talk 105.9.
The saga regarding MPs' expenses rumbles on. Now, we talked about this at length last week on the show. The MPs have received letters from Sir Thomas Legg, basically asking them to pay back various amounts of money. One such MP is one of our local people. His name is Frank Field. He's MP from Birkenhead, and he joins me on the line. Morning, Frank.
Hello.
Thank you for your time this morning. Well, it's been reported you need to pay back £7,000. I'm reading your blog, The Justice of a Roulette Wheel, from which the opening words say, from honourable member to rogue. Why do you feel like a rogue?
Well, these MPs resisted publishing these expenses, and I voted with the minority saying clearly this is taxpayers' money, taxpayers should know. Then we actually had that overturned decision in the High Court, thank goodness. And as soon as I got my expenses, David in the office here is a whiz at this, found a way in which we could put them up immediately on the website, but without bank detail information and so on. We gave that to all other MPs who actually wanted to do so. So I've been as open as possible, and from that you can see they're still on the website, that my claim against the maximum allowance has been falling, and that last year it was about 30%. And now I find that Sir Thomas Legg says that over these five-year period, I should pay back, as you say, 7,000, but 5,000 of that is because he says I charge, in his judgment, too much for cleaning and gardening, whereas in fact I've always put in a claim for somebody who acts in a very part-time capacity as housekeeper. And these claims were passed, And now I find that in a retrospective judgment, his judgment, nobody else's, that I have to pay more. And it, and given that I understand the public anger at what has actually been claimed, I was not only moving from honourable member to rogue, but I was dazed that somebody who's got one of the lowest claims in should actually be, you know, handed that letter.
Yeah. I mean, it's fair to say, as an MP, you've always been keen for transparency, and I'm just wondering whether or not you feel this morning that, that you're being tarred with the same brush as far more guilty parties.
Well, I'm the first one to, I think, to come forward and say, look, Frankfield here, I've been asked to claim repay $7,000 over this five-year period, because I'm really anxious to find out what other members have got, because it's not a collective spirit here. Everybody's gone to ground, and maybe more people will now come forward. And the first move is that I've written back to challenge this, to say, how did you decide on this sum of money, this cut-off point? And my constituents who've talked to me mainly say that they object to people flipping their homes, not once, but maybe four times, of using their money to build up property portfolios, which has happened, or maybe claiming 23,000 in mortgage interest relief. Now, is he actually inquiring into that and putting a cap on the amount you can claim for mortgage interest relief and applying it retrospectively? Now, it would appear he's not, because those who've said they're claiming 22,000 are paying minimal sums back.
You said a few moments ago that the people have gone to ground. What's the current mood in Westminster at the moment? When you talk to your colleagues, elected members, not just Merseyside MPs, but right across the United Kingdom, what's the kind of sense of atmosphere at the moment?
Oh, total depression. One, because, you know, the being in the stocks isn't very pleasant, though some of us deserve to be in the stocks. Depressed because any charge against the bankers, who's almost brought the country to ruin, there's no debate about that at all. And depression because, I mean, we have a real mega economic problem here, whether the world's going to lend us enough money to actually get us through the next 5 years. And there's literally no debate on any of these things. The atmosphere is paralyzed with what was supposed to be the last, you know, the tidying up operation of expenses that Gordon Brown initiated. It's now, you know, it's going to run to the general election, isn't it?
You said that some MPs deserve to be in the stocks. Well, what should happen to those MPs?
Well, I think two things should happen. If they've broken the law, the file should just be handed to the Director of Public Prosecutions to see whether there should be a prosecution. But I also think that one of the big lessons we're surely going to learn from this is we no longer have self-regulation. But even when we have non-self-regulation, like Sir Thomas Legg brought in, it's a bit of a sort of loose cannon. And my constituents who are self-employed or have small businesses have to submit all their claims to the local revenue office. And I think MPs should be in the same boat as those who have to put any expenses past the inland revenue. And I would long for one of the big reforms to come from this, that we are in effect treated as self-employed or mini small businesses because we employ a few staff, and that the revenue should deal with us exactly the same way as they deal with our constituents. And I think we'd be over the hump then.
It's City Talk Breakfast. I'm talking to the MP for Birkenhead, Frank Field. Frank, on your blog, you say that Sir Thomas Legg correctly points out that over the five-year period, you claimed twice for three bills amounting to £117. The bills shouldn't have been presented twice nor paid. How do you claim twice for something?
Well, he said I have, and so I've accepted that. I mean, the office is in the...
Are you saying that you haven't?
No, I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying, I was just going to explain, that I don't want any more attacks on our fees office staff, who everybody gets up and blames fees office staff. Mm. But the normal procedure is, if, for example, I have a utility bill, I pay it at the post office and then send it in. And should we need to check that, or any guarantee, we have to actually ask for it quite properly. We have to ask for the bills back or copies of them. So I'm amazed that I was managed to actually submit it, and this quite proper procedure didn't actually operate in three cases. But I just want to say that let's accept that. I don't want to, you know, this awful, you know, degrading game of trying to say I'm innocent. It was the Fees Office officials.
All three party leaders have said, and I'm not using a direct quote here, but there's been a sense of the same from all three of them, pay up and shut up, including Gordon Brown. Do you think they're right to say that?
Well, if I was party leader, I'd probably say that, but I'm not, so I'm saying something differently. I mean, the last few days of the Parliament before our summer recess, I was voting against the government, who had monstrously imposed retrospectively 3 years' rates on many businesses in our port in Liverpool and other ports around the country.
Yeah.
And my case was, it's outrageous that these businesses should be threatened in this way with huge bills, which they thought they were paying with their rent, and now you change the rules and give them a backdated claim like this. Little did I know that on the first day back, I would get a letter being similarly treated. And I would be as angry for any of my constituents having retrospective legislation applied against them as I am for myself. And I don't think MPs should be, because we are in low esteem at the moment, because we are in the stocks, because people, you know, want to vent their anger at us, I don't believe we should go down, which is a very dangerous track in a free society, where governments decide that they will change the rules after the events. Change them for the future, but not after. And the blog you quote, I put on there, it's just as though you live in a 30-mile speed zone. You've never actually motored more than 20 miles an hour. And then at the end of a five-year period, you get a clutch of fines telling you, well, we've decided this is a 10-mile zone, and you've been breaking the law for the past 5 years. I just don't think we should go down that route. And I know it's hard to argue for MPs, but, I mean, we are citizens as well.
Mm. I mean, I think that's an interesting analogy, but I get the sense that for certain people that's not going to be enough, because I think for a number of factors, including, it's fair to say, the campaign by the Daily Telegraph, people quite literally want blood. Which leads me on to this question. I mean, we have listeners listening this morning in Birkenhead. They're your constituents. They will have heard various viewpoints regarding MPs' expenses quite probably this morning, quite confused by all of this, thinking, well, what now? How do we sort this out? What would be your message to them?
Well, the message to them is, one is that we're going through this process where those who want to object can. My aim is not to damage the Legg inquiry, and therefore allowing others who should be making large repayments off the hook. But if at the end of the day we find those who have, I think, abused the system, claimed the maximum every year, have flipped their homes, bought a whole string of properties on the backs of taxpayers, if they walk away free, and it appears that they are, apart from the investigations that the Telegraph do, then it's a travesty what we're actually getting, and the issue won't rest here. It clearly will go on and needs to go on until we satisfy our constituents that we've got our own house in order.
And how much damage do you think this has done to the parliamentary system and people's confidence in their elected representatives?
Well, if you think back to the polls, it wasn't very high before all this started. So it can't be higher now, can it? And it's all right in the short term to attack the representatives and weaken the institutions. But there does come a point, you know, at the end of the day, if this continues like this, then increasing numbers of people, we know the trend, do not vote. It does makes it easy for those groups who want to fight politics on the streets rather than inside Westminster. It makes it easier for them, and that's the longer-term danger, which I also think we have to hold on to. We'll get through this, and in a year's time, I think people will be amazed that we could get so angry, rightly, justifiable anger about this, but at the same time, we're missing so many key things which were affecting the future of our country. I think people in a year's time might think we got the balance wrong.
Frank Field, MP for Birkenhead, thank you for your time.
In a world full of bungling bureaucrats, power-crazed politicians, jumped-up pen pushers, and the plain old stupid, one man fights a lone battle for sanity, armed with a sword of vitriol and a shield of common sense. Duncan Barks takes on the Pillocks the only way he can, by awarding them the title of Duncan's Donut.
Today's donut goes to a couple of people who you'll be familiar with, because the story that features today's donuts has been all over the TV news over the last couple of days. I'm bored of it. I really am bored of it. I'm talking about the parents of this kid who apparently was in a helium balloon that floated off across Colorado, except the kid wasn't in the balloon. I mean, you can see that on the footage. Where would the kid hide in that balloon? Anyway, the parents of this six-year-old boy, believed to have floated off in a hot air balloon, will face charges after police in the United States ruled it was a hoax. Now, the parents in question, Richard and Mayumi Heen, planned the disappearance of their son, Falcon. Well, that tells you everything you need to know, giving the poor boy that name, Falcon. To try to what? Why do you think they thought it'd be a good idea to pretend that their six-year-old lad was in this big balloon that drifted off miles over Colorado? Well, why would they do that? And this tells you everything you need to know. To get some sort of TV show or reality show deal. Good God. Last night, Colorado Sheriff Jim Alderden said, "We have since learned that these people are actors." Not only have they appeared on several TV shows and YouTubes. Oh, he's in touch, isn't he? They've appeared on several YouTubes. The way that they met was in acting school in Hollywood. Well, guilty as charged then, far as I'm concerned. Goes on to say, they put on a very good show for us and we bought it. Everyone and everything felt it was very credible. A worldwide TV audience watched the balloon drama, but when it landed, Falcon was nowhere to be seen. He was eventually found hiding in the attic at home, but let slip in a TV interview that he had been told to hide for a show. Well, clearly the acting gene hasn't been passed on to the kid, has it? His parents will face charges of conspiracy, contributing to the delinquency of a minor, false reporting, and attempting to influence a police officer. They could face 12 years in jail if convicted. Well, I say good, and I say right. Because if I see that blooming footage of that balloon taking off from their back garden again, I think I'll do my nut. Listen, Richard and Mayumi Heen, you two, guilty as charged, donuts.
Go. Duncan's Donuts.
Find out more about City Talk Breakfast with Duncan Barks at citytalk.fm. We hope you've enjoyed the Dunk Cast. If you have, please download again next week.